This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Audubon's Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary in Collier County is celebrating its 65th birthday this year. And now it has a new sanctuary director at the helm. Dr. Lisa Korte comes to Corkscrew after spending years working in the rainforests of Central and West Africa. After graduating from Cornell University, Dr. Korte went to Africa as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She lived in a remote village for 2 years and learned to speak the Kikongo language and provided technical assistance to subsistence-level fish farmers. After the Peace Corps, she returned to the United States to work with the Africa Program of Wildlife Conservation Society. But the resume does not stop there. After getting her PhD from Michigan State University, Dr. Korte served as a foreign affairs officer in the Office of Central African Affairs at the U.S. Department of State. She was then director of the Smithsonian Institution's Gabon Biodiversity Program from 2010 to 2016, where she worked to conserve tropical rainforests with non-governmental organizations, large multinational corporations, and government representatives. She then moved to Liberia, working with the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, where she helped local communities improve conservation for tropical forests and biodiversity. And now she's here in Southwest Florida. Dr. Korte, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for coming in to chat with us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to come in.
This conversation is pre-taped, so we're not taking calls, but you can always connect with us via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So how does one decide to pivot from West Africa to Collier County, Florida?
It's Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary that drew me here. So I think the thing that has been the common thread throughout my career, whether in Africa or here in Florida, is working in forests.
In forests. Mm-hmm. So why this one?
This one's fairly incredible. It's a swamp, which is basically a wetland with trees. The sanctuary also includes wetland with grasses, which is a marsh. And it's an incredibly beautiful place, incredibly important for birds as well as other wildlife in a great state of Florida. And also a place that while it is a sanctuary and a tranquil place, it also has a lot of pressures around it. So it makes for a very interesting job and location.
It's bordered by some serious development.
Correct.
Right. So how long have you been in town?
2 months.
2 months. So had you been here before to visit?
In fact, in 1997, I met my husband in Naples. That was my last visit.
Okay. Well, so what were you doing in Liberia most recently?
Working with communities in tropical forest and biodiversity. So basically working with communities that now have rights to their forest. And so they've been recognized by the government that they can manage their forests, but helping them to do that in a productive way. So to conserve some of the forest for its biodiversity, also use the forest resources and use it in a way that they can make a profit, but not in a way that's going to be the short term. And so really helping those communities to take responsibility for their natural resources so it can benefit their communities.
So these were forest areas that had been 100% preserved, but then suddenly people had the right to work within them?
So they had not necessarily been 100% preserved, but not heavily impacted. And so they were land that was recognized as tropical forest. And then the communities would take the initiative to ask for permission from the government to get the authority to manage the forest for the sake of their community. So there was kind of like common land, but by going through this process, it was legally recognized.
So it's offering an opportunity for people to do some sort of subsistence and work with
Basically to manage their tropical forest. Rather than having the government or an outside company, allow the local communities to take responsibility and manage the resources for their communities and towns.
And then reap the benefits of what
exactly.
they get from it.
Exactly, yes. And so really helping them to understand that and to become better business people. It's not just about, now we've got the forest, but how do we use that forest in a way that it makes money over many years as opposed to the short term? You know, you could take a management approach where you cut it all down, but then you've got several decades until you're going to have that resource again. So how do you manage it in a way that you can make a profit, but do that over the long term?
So what kind of resources were there in the forest there that people were able to live with, to work with?
Primarily trees. And so lumber was
so
a
timber,
big thing.
Okay.
Timber. So how do you manage that well? How do you not let a big company come in and take over your resource? You know, oftentimes these communities might not have the same skill set as an international logging company. And so how are you sure that they're able to manage and negotiate in a meaningful way that both parties really benefit?
Okay. It's kind of like an intermediary kind of position that you were
Helping the communities to reach that so they could do it on their own. So supporting them, giving them the training, providing them with resources so they could build up their communities as institutions and as small businesses.
And not allow their forest that they're managing be exploited by an outsider who
and
won't be there in 10 years.
Exactly. And be sold for a song, you know.
That's really, really an interesting line of work. So for someone that's not up on their African geography, where would Liberia be if the continent were a clock?
It would be at about 10 o'clock. So, you know, it's on the west coast of Africa, so just south of the Sahara Desert. So you have Sahara Desert, and then it gradually gets greener and greener. And as you get to the coast where Liberia is, there you've got tropical rainforest.
So there you are in Liberia. You're doing the job we just fully described. How did you hear about the job at Sanctuary? The Corkscrew Sanctuary?
On the Audubon Careers website. So my position in Liberia had finished, and so I was on a job search and looking for work that was still in conservation. And so that's really at the heart of what I like doing. So working in wilderness areas, working for conservation. Audubon has an incredible reputation as a conservation organization. So I had a few conservation organizations where I was targeting my job search, and this one came up, and it was, you know, had all the elements. It really had an interesting position in that Corkscrew has a beautiful landscape. So you have wetlands that you're managing, land management, a strong research program that's monitoring and evaluating that land management. We have a visitor center where we're out there working with the public and have our incredible boardwalk for visitors to come out and walk through a swamp. And then we also are working in the policy realm as well. So as someone who has worked in a bit of all of those things, having it in one place was really alluring.
I think that it's going to be interesting, the parallels that you may be able to draw when it comes to development in our area with the forests in Africa that you were helping people to figure out how to manage with outsiders coming in to develop. Do you see many parallels already? I know you've only been there for a couple months.
I certainly see that I would like to do more in terms of reaching out to our neighbors. I think we have a long history of the sanctuary, of knowing our neighbors and working with them. But one of the things we're really discovering is that our land management, while we can do a good job within our borders, there are things that happen outside our borders that can impact our wetland areas. And so how do we build our sanctuary as a model for people to see as a way to manage natural resources? And then how do we work with the community outside, whether it's our immediate neighbors or the neighbors in our county, the county to our north, the state? And so really thinking about how does what we're doing on the ground serve as a good example and help people making decisions about natural resource management, whether it's in their backyard, their county, their state, or their nation.
I think it's really interesting that that border area, because at the north part of your border is Corkscrew Road. Am I right?
Correct. Well, yes, there's some property that's a little bit further south, but yes, you're on that border of Corkscrew Road. So the northern border of the sanctuary is the southern border of Lee County.
Do you have concerns about the continued development out into inland? I mean, it just seems like it keeps spreading to east. Does that concern you a little bit, as that is your northern neighbor?
It does concern us, and so that's why we watch it carefully. We have Brad Cornell is our policy person. He was recently here, and so he's really our lead on following what's happening there, working with lawmakers, working with the public, and better understanding that. So, yes, we do have concerns, and we're watching it closely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch how things continue to unfold there, because there's such a tug of war, and it seems like everybody that moves down here, I know our population continues to grow, but once somebody gets here, they just want to pull up the drawbridge and say, okay, no more development. We're here.
Yes.
But people keep wanting to
keep coming.
So let's go way back. What made you decide to go to Africa as a Peace Corps volunteer? What inspired that?
my love of nature and of animals. So as an undergraduate, I was a biology major, and I took positions as interns at zoos. So I grew up in Buffalo, New York, or in a suburb of Buffalo, New York, and I did an internship as a zookeeper at the Buffalo Zoo. And then I went on and did another summer internship at the Lincoln Park Zoo, and I really liked working with animals. And my mentor at the Lincoln Park Zoo was doing research in Panama on a rodent called an agouti. And I was just fascinated with that.
An agouti.
And it was fascinating that he was like out in the field working with wild animals in wild populations, trying to better understand how they disperse seeds, like the fruits that they eat in these tropical forests, how they move those around the forest, and that leads to regrowth. And so I was fascinated with the idea of working abroad. But as an undergraduate, you know, you finish, there's not a whole lot of job opportunities. And Peace Corps, it spoke to kind of my sense of giving and being a volunteer, but also, hey, I can go abroad and get some international experience. And so that's what attracted me, and I landed in a great place.
So do you have a favorite animal or like a little spirit animal? Who do you connect with?
There's so many, but elephants are incredible animals, and I have lived with elephants in some spectacular places. So that might be the place in Africa, you know, the animal that I connected with the most there.
Yeah, they are pretty majestic.
Yes.
And their entire – the family unit, the whole looking out for one another thing that we just admire as humans, because you can see it in the elephants.
Oh, most definitely.
So your bio says that you lived in a remote village for 2 years and learned to speak the Kikongo language. Mm-hmm. How is that language? Do you still speak it?
I wouldn't say that I'm fluent. I'm sure if I went back, I could say hello, how are you, and have a basic conversation. So I might not be at the same level I was when I was living in the village.
How do you say hello, how are you?
Mbotinange.
Okay. Mbotinange. That's so interesting. I mean, it's weird how language stays with you until you're immersed in it and you can completely forget it. Did you find that you forgot English sometimes while you were there speaking a different language?
Oh, I don't know if I forgot English. But
you have to search for words.
Yeah. And I think also you learn phrases that are just better in that language. So even if you're like, you know, you see a Peace Corps volunteer and you might be speaking English with them, but then you'll throw in a Kikongo phrase because there's just not a good English translation.
What would be – do you have an example of one of those you can think of?
I'm going to cheat a little and use a French example. Bon appétit, you know?
Yeah.
We don't really have an equivalent in English. So.
Eat up.
Yeah. Eat well.
Time to hit the trough.
Yeah. It's just one that comes to mind.
So you've always been on this conservation path, and you spent time in Florida before. You earned a Master's of Science in Wildlife Conservation and Ecology from the University of Florida. When was that, and what kind of differences do you see from before when you were in Florida and now?
Okay. So I was at University of Florida from 1994 to 1997. Had a wonderful time there. I was a teaching assistant for several field technique courses, so I really did get out in the field. And I did a course, a wetlands management course, where we took students out to catch baby alligators in a swamp at night. I mean, it was exciting. And so I think that really instilled my appreciation and love for Florida's wilderness. And I think, you know, I see the development. We talked about that earlier. I was in Naples on a short break, a spring break in 1997. And in those years in between, the city has really grown. So
a lot of things have happened, too. And then also the invasive species. We're hearing so much about the snakes.
You know? Yes. Yeah. At Corkscrew, we're fortunate. We don't have any pythons there yet. We are hoping for the best. We're monitoring the situation. One of the differences that you see when we talk to researchers that are working south of us in the Everglades, they no longer see small mammals. So we feel fortunate. We know we still see raccoons. We still see rabbits. So we are, you know, we are lucky in that respect that the pythons are not yet here. But invasive species, there's over 60 species of plants that are invasive to our land. So it's just a constant battle to keep our good habitat good.
Yeah, it's tough because then there's the management of that. And you see that, for example, with that hibiscus. What's the
– Water hyacinth?
Water hyacinth. I want to say hibiscus. Those are pretty. The water hyacinth, where there is a lot of chemicals that have been sprayed to try to keep that at bay. Mm-hmm. But how do you, there's such a tough balancing act.
It is. It's a very tough balancing act. You know, how do you use the right tool mm-hmm. and mitigate its risk on that? I mean, one of the things that we are doing with some of our marsh areas, so where we have water areas that have had really plants that love water and are making these places dry, what we have started to do is using mechanical methods. So rather than using a spray, using a mulching system. So we go in and grind that vegetation that is sucking up the water, grind it, put it back into that leave it in the wetland, let it stand, and then that water comes in. We're seeing incredible results. And so we have areas that we've opened up. The water is back in. We're seeing wading birds. We're seeing typical wetland birds in numbers that we haven't seen recently. Whistling ducks are a good example.
And whistling ducks. I haven't seen these guys.
Well, you'll have to come out to the swamp.
Every time someone comes in here from Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary, I promise I'm going to get out there.
We need to set a date right now.
We really do. We'll have a play date out at Corkscrew Swamp where I can see all these guys. But what is your favorite part about being out there? I just can imagine you walking along on the boardwalk and just breathing it in.
That's what I do. Yes, I love it. So, you know, every day is a new day. And so it's really a spectacular place. And the ease, you know, when I was living in Africa, I lived in areas that had swamps and, you know, you're up to your knees, up to your waist in water. You're, you know, like you're losing your boot in the mud and you're like getting eaten by mosquitoes and you're like, okay. But, you know, at Corkscrew, we've got this beautiful boardwalk over 2 miles, and you can just walk along it. And
so the only thing that's getting messy is your sweat.
That's just part of the experience.
Yeah. That's the only part that's gross about it when you're on the boardwalk.
It's cleansing. You're cleaning your pores.
It's detox is what we call that. Just get it out of there. So what do you kind of see as your primary mission leading the Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary? I mean, you said it's multi-pronged, but is there something that you've identified as a critical thing that you really need to get after?
I would say our land management and the science that drives that. And so we're a sanctuary. We have wetlands that are important for birds and wildlife and, you know, the entire surrounding area. So really maintaining that wetland in its healthiest at its best, using science to monitor that and to be sure, okay, are we on track? You know, is this method that we're using, does it work well? And then getting that message out to the public. So when our visitors come in, they can appreciate what they're seeing in the forest. But we also want them to know, hey, this is what we're doing out in the what we call the backcountry, the area beyond the boardwalk. So we're using techniques that you might want to use at home. You might want to think about if you're making a decision as an elected official, like here's what works well with wetlands. So getting that out to the public and helping decision makers. So, you know, if we get our land management right and do it well, it serves as a model and we can share that across the, you know, across the world as well. So I'd say getting land management right allows us to do all of those other things.
It feels like politically this has been a good time to come into this position because it seems like after the blue-green algae and red tide thing that we went through for the past year, mm-hmm. and we're looking at more blue-green algae again this year, which is not necessarily happening at the Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary, but it seems like those events and those crises have kind of spurred a desire in people on all ends of the political spectrum to get involved in preserving what we have here as far as our natural assets. Mm-hmm. Do you get a sensation of that?
Yeah, I think it's really helped us to better appreciate that these things are connected. Our wetland areas inland are connected and providing a service for our coastal areas. These things don't act independently. And so being able to manage wetlands well has an impact on, has a very positive impact on what's happening on the coastline. These things are not disconnected. And so the better job that land managers, land owners, government officials can do in terms of maintaining healthy wetlands, that has a very positive impact on the water that's going to our coastal areas.
And I know we've been hearing a lot about record numbers of birds nesting. Mm-hmm. Have you been witness to that?
Certainly, I've been witness to it, and my team is working on that. And I think that's a great story in terms of, you know, if we do this right, if we get water management right, we see the results. And I think these record number of birds was like, wow, okay, we've done what we needed to do, and here are the results. And so I'm a witness in terms of seeing those numbers, working with the staff that have been doing this long prior to me, and we're now like, okay, yeah, we have a plan. We know how we can move forward, and here's the results. And, you know, seeing a lot of birds makes a lot of people happy.
Yeah, there's a lot of great people that you're working with there, too. It's a really wonderful team.
Yeah, Dr. Sean Clem, who was here just a few weeks ago talking about the birds, she's excellent. And I would say my entire team, if there's one thing that has really inspired and impressed me, is the depth and breadth of dedication, whether it's our volunteers, our staff, our donors. You know, every person is connected to the sanctuary. They have a love of the work they're doing. It's not a 9-to-5 job for them. You know, everybody is so engaged and very inspired and dedicated. And, you know, what a gift to walk into that.
It is. It's a good time, really, to be coming into this position, and a good group of people that you're working with. So it's a pretty good situation. Is there anything else that you really look forward to the very, very most in this position?
I look to, you know, really helping it continue on its journey. As you said, we're celebrating our 65th birthday. We want to go 65 years and beyond. You know, we want to be able to maintain the sanctuary, have it be a model here in Florida and across the world. So I really look forward to putting things in place that'll allow us to be successful in the long term.
Mm-hmm. And I know that I think your trajectory seems so interesting in that you got into what you're into because you really like animals.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting about it is that you ended up going into the forests and preserving those forests because that is the home for the animals.
Yeah, and it's such an important natural resource for people. You know, at Audubon, we protect the birds, and that helps protect the earth. You know, it is not just about the animals. It's really about the resources and the services it brings to communities.
Well, there's an interconnectedness there that is really critical that people seem to be, and maybe I'm a little bit too optimistic, seem to be becoming more and more aware of.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, and that's our visitor center. You know, that's a place to invite people to connect and to give them access that, you know, you might not be able to go through a swamp otherwise. You know, I think one of the great things I love about the boardwalk as well, walking through it, you know, like you're in the middle of this forest. And because we have 2 miles of boardwalk, it's also very accessible for handicap. We've got enough space for 2 wheelchairs to pass either way. And so what might be difficult in some cases to get out into a forest, especially a wet forest, it really is a unique opportunity. And so I really love that accessibility as well.
Yeah, that is really great. Everybody gets to share in it. So your brief bio ends with, quote, "When not observing wildlife, Lisa enjoys walking her dog, biking, reading, and hiking in the forest and on the beach." Have you had much of a chance to walk out on the beach yet?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So I have been out to the Barefoot Preserve, and that was a lovely place. We went out with a botanist and learned about some of the native Florida plants with the Native Plant Society. And so that was a great introduction to Florida's beaches.
What's your dog's name?
Ellie.
Ellie?
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting something, some kind of a name that's inspired by Africa. So, so have you taken your dog to the dog beach yet?
Not yet, but we're thinking about it tomorrow.
All right. Well, have fun out there. It'll be nice and warm. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
I just would like to invite everyone out to Audubon's Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. We're open 365 days a year and look forward to seeing you.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest. Dr. Lisa Korda is the now Sanctuary Director at the Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. Lisa, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you.
When we return, as we just alluded to, the 2018 wading bird nesting season was one of the largest on record. That's according to the annual South Florida Wading Bird Report recently released by the South Florida Water Management District. It was prepared along with Audubon, Florida. We're going to listen back to a conversation we had earlier this year to find out what this means and whether it's a sign of things to come. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.